Welcome to the Truth to Power show on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm your host, VJR Nathan, and with us today is co-host Claire Van Winkle of Rockaway Writers Workshop.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday.
Good morning. So today we're going to be celebrating the one-year anniversary.
Happy birthday to the VJ show.
Thank you. And this has been 1 year that the Truth to Power show has been coming out to you on Radio Free Brooklyn. So I'm going to put out a call out for
call-ins.
Yeah. The number is 718-928-9732. And we'd like guests, listeners to call in to talk about shows they listen to, favorite episodes, or anything that comes out to them, anything, just to say hi, you know?
And if you have any ideas for things that you would like to hear us talk about, or the types of writers, artists, or musicians you would like to hear from, give us a call and tell us about those too.
Yeah, definitely call out. And
otherwise, you have to listen to VJ interview me and vice versa. And we might disclose all kinds of personal secrets if you let us ramble on too much. No one wants that.
Good. So, so what's coming up for you? Like, in the past year, we've been doing different interviews, but this is our first time kind of trying to put out a call out for a
Collins.
Collins, call out for Collins. I keep thinking of call out Collins. I don't know. But yeah. So what's come up for me, at least, is that we were talking about zines. I keep thinking zines, but it's zines.
It's been so long since anyone has picked up an actual magazine that the shortened word has officially departed from its root.
Exactly. So you're talking about zines. So if anyone has their own zine or is running either a web zine or a print zine, please call in.
Or if there's anything in particular you would love to see in an up-and-coming zine, tell us that too. Hint, hint.
Exactly. We're both kind of interested. We have these dream projects for starting a
And you can call and tell us about your dream projects.
Yeah.
Okay, but keep going about yours. Sorry, I didn't mean to kill your dream just there.
That's okay. So I was thinking about the title being Bodhi Hive. Like Bodhi being the enlightenment and Hive being the hive mind. And basically kind of finding the spaces for the collective to represent their wisdom, to represent their wisdom in politics specifically. And it'd be quarterly. It would be a quarterly.
So it's like a not scary, not dystopian hive mind. Though.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just making sure.
The positive hive mind.
Just making sure you're not trying to brainwash us,
DJ. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's really interesting when you think about hive mind that it has brought on a negative quality to it. That we think about kind of drones and conforming. But actually, I think there's something very beautiful about it.
Well, you can look at it in terms of the loss of identity or in terms of a social support system.
Mm.
Wow, it's so strange that those things can be on totally separate ends of the spectrum of scary and terrible.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that when it comes to Occupy Wall Street, I went to go visit their camp during their time that they were occupying. And they had this interesting technique of amplifying where the crowd would repeat.
Mm-hmm.
Like a mic or something. It was a mic, but it was like a mic. There was a mic check. It would say mic check, and then the group would repeat mic check. And
they would call and response?
Yeah, exactly. They would repeat the words that they were saying.
Right.
So anything they were saying, they would just repeat like an amplification.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a hive mind because they're kind of amplifying. They weren't able to use actual mics. Mm-hmm. So that was their technique of overcoming that barrier, yeah.
And there are certain times when shared ideas, sometimes it's good to copy people's ideas. Like if somebody's doing really something really awesome or good for the community and you're like, ooh, that's so cool. Mm. I should try that too so I can be cool. It doesn't matter why you're doing it. You should do it because you're still doing a good thing. So kind of following somebody else's lead can be positive.
Exactly. And I as I've talked about...
We can influence people for good.
Exactly. And as I've talked about... Improv uses the hive mind, and I think there's, for the most part, it's really great material that comes out of improv. I think improv is a really great thing, and exploring the hive mind in that sense, kind of understanding that we're amplifying each other. We're kind of trying to find the places of commonality and trying to find a synergy in a group synergy. You know, so that's really, it has some very amazing results.
It's interesting, though, because I'm a dancer, too. I don't know if you knew that. I sort of need to do it more and get back in shape. But I was a modern dancer and choreographer, and I used to work with other dancers who did a lot of contact improv. But honestly, that didn't really feel like a hive. It was more like a contact sport, but not only in the way it's kind of like, I'll throw you this challenge to see how you react to this. And we'll start to fall down and see if we can do it gracefully. And just so it's almost like challenging each other. So it's strange because I've done some improv acting too, and it is a totally different experience when you're like trying to get people on the same page versus pushing them off balance.
Exactly. And to return to the zine idea, so Bodhi Hive would be a collection of essays as well as poetry and fiction, but kind of more focused on the process papers to kind of get to social criticism.
Can you explain what you mean by process papers?
Yeah, process papers basically means like looking at either canon, classic poets, or contemporary and new poets, and kind of being able to understand how they connect to social, political, or socio-psychological themes, and kind of just taking a moment to like almost do like an academic kind of way, but for lay readers.
And so it would be kind of like if one of our listeners who happened to be a writer were to call in and read us her poem and then tell us all about where the inspiration came from and why it's applicable to life, social issues, love, whatever today, right? Wouldn't that be kind of like
that'd
a process
be great.
Paper?
And you can call in at 718-928-9732. That's 718-928-9732. And we'll just put you on air. So,
do you know how to put somebody on the air?
Yeah.
Just making sure.
Good, yeah. So I have to listen for the ring.
Once it rings, we're total pros, by the way.
We've all done this before, but I've done this before. But,
I haven't.
Yeah.
So be gentle. Don't ask me questions that are too hard, or I might not know the answer.
Good.
I can barely figure out which microphone to talk into.
I have the subheading, a tagline for the Bodhi Hive Quarterly, as called the subversive progressive quarterly for meditative politics. So we have progressives. I'm thinking about rearranging them every quarter. So we have like the progressively subversive quarterly for meditative
politics.
You
can have a new byline every single quarter.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I'm good at bylines. Yeah. I can help with that.
I like rearranging.
Cheesy little, you know, every single time I create a new writing workshop theme, it always has a title and a byline. This one is actually called Revolutions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it's I forget my own byline. Anyway, if you're interested in the writing workshop Revolutions, we're pushing back our registration date until after the holidays. So you can check rockawaywritersworkshop.org. And this workshop is for everybody writing anything, but it's focusing on how to have arcs within the text. So how to spiral your way through a complex story or poem, and to find the little revolutions in your own work. It's not necessarily, it's not meant to be political, but can be if that's what you're into.
Yeah.
But it's kind of about finding that revolutionary tension within all kinds of writing.
Good. I remember in high school, actually, I did this junior newsletter that we published for the class. And I used I would put news about what was going on in the school because I was elected to student government. So I'd put news about the school, and then I have like,
Did you have a meditation portion added to the school curriculum?
No, I mean, at that time I wasn't as focused on that, but I did have opinion articles, like a pro and con.
Okay.
And I have. Like,
how old were you?
I was in junior in high school, so I must have been 16 or 17 or something. I had like a pro and con article, and I have like news.
Do these still exist?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
you
I think,
should bring
I know
them in.
Yeah. And then I subtitled the newsletter "Printing All the News That Fits."
Okay.
So, yeah. I don't know. Now it's a little
more
popular.
That.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. So I would just fit in. I had a template, and I would just fit in as much as I could. And because of the fact that I had the template, and I had to, if some little thing was a gap, I just put a picture in, or I fit something in there to fit into that template.
Yeah. Ooh, I remember the byline for Revolutions.
Uh-huh.
False starts, full circles, and finding the point.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like finding the point on the
point,
beginning.
You know, in the circle, because there's no point.
Yeah, exactly.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
So, Vijay, I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
What is the worst thing you have ever written?
Actually, I wrote something I discussed on one of our other shows on Radio Free Brooklyn, Lost and Rewound, where I wrote this play called Wide Awake in college. And it was a very inaccessible work, I guess, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been looking at it again and kind of revisiting it and thinking about what was the thought, not necessarily the writing itself, but what was the thought that pushed me through writing this one-act play and trying to think about that. And when I saw Suspiria, which is a new 2018 movie.
I think there's a lot of scantily clad dancing girls.
Exactly,
in it, right?
Exactly.
I'm totally going to go see that.
It's really good. And it's a movie about a woman who auditions for a dance troupe. And it turns out the dance troupe is a coven of witches.
Oh, wow.
So it's really, that doesn't give away too much, I don't think. But because that's kind of, they tell you that in the beginning. But they're basically like the supernatural element to it.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, there's a supernatural element to everything with scantily like, clad women dancing.
Yeah, good, good. So it also is a remake of a 1977 movie, but this one I saw, and I was like, oh, that was kind of what I was trying to go for with Wide Awake. That was a thought, but it didn't quite express it correctly. But about acting and about the supernatural Lombardo, I wanted to explore like how states of being are actually, we're just actors and we're just kind of taking on these roles and discarding these roles. And we kind of have that, we don't remember what is going on until we kind of pass into the next state. You
know? Essentially you're saying that the worst thing you ever wrote was a really awesome idea that you're probably going to revisit.
Yeah.
Wonderful to be you.
So the thought, I think I had a nugget there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise I wouldn't have sat there for so many hours, you know, writing it.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as poems go, I remember this is one poem I wrote, The Enigma. That was the first poem I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called, The Enigma, why do you hate the world so much? Are you truly free? You're the one I know is broke while I am gone into the red of the violet smoke. I mean, it's interesting, but it just really...
Very enigmatic.
Very enigmatic, yeah.
When did you write that?
Junior or senior in college? At high school? Rather, sorry. Yeah, high school. So my first poem, I think, in high school... that I wrote, I was like, I think I was responding to a specific, you know, relationship,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it doesn't really say much, you know, I just kind of just using
well,
this language.
Given the title.
Yeah. The Enigma. Yeah. Yeah.
That's either brilliant or a cop out in terms of titles go.
Yeah.
I can't decide which.
It's kind of like when, at the end of a script, they're like, you wake up from a dream. It was all a dream. It's kind of like either cop out or.
God, you don't know how many times I wish that moment came to me during real life. It's a dream.
The whole play you just saw was just a dream. They just disregard it all, you know? That's a real cop-out ending, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So anybody want to talk to us, go to 718-928-9732. Call in and we'll chat.
Or alternately, you could call in to talk to us at 718-928-9732.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. So, what about you? What's the past writing that you kind of cringe at?
Well, I thought yours were going to be bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the first poem I ever wrote, but it was in seventh grade.
Yeah.
You want to hear
it?
I remember it. I was a really weird kid. It's called Darkest Night. Darkest night, no stars or light to comfort emptiness. Some will freeze and some will seize the devil's darkest kiss. Take me, hold me, dare unfold me, dare to see inside. Take my hand and understand that darkness is your guide. The night is dark and like a shark, it creeps to seize its prey. I fall and kneel and suddenly feel no longer is there day. Hey, seventh grade Claire, what the fuck were you thinking?
I feel like the dark and shark
devil.
Rhyme.
Yeah,
I love that.
Oh, wasn't that clever?
That was clever.
Goodness. I remember writing that during like the silent reading period in my religion class in elementary school and thinking I was like totally artistic and shit.
Yeah, that's great. No, that's good. It was good. I liked it.
I'm glad you liked it, but the whole it was good part, thank you for being kind.
And then what other things do you have to share about writings or past writing, how you evolved?
The first thing, one of the I don't know if it's really smart, but one of the more deep and I guess heavy thoughts that I had about writing was something that I was discussing with a patient who was literally having an existential crisis and without revealing anything about the patient, basically, she had some really cool stuff to say about how, and it was so logical, it was a bit upsetting, kind of saying like, well, everybody convinces you and tries to give you proof that living is good and life is good. But isn't there just as much proof the other way? Like, aren't our therapists a bit close-minded if they won't even discuss like the concept of suicide? Mm. So I'm sitting one-on-one with this person and suddenly it has become my job to convince her that life is worth living. Mm. No pressure, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I decided that life is writing. Mm. So if you write down what you've done during the course of a day, then if you want to be an existentialist in terms of the meaning and the point, right? It doesn't necessarily, they're not saying happy ending, happy discovery. They're saying meaning, point. Well, you have written something today. That is a conclusion. It's something that is proof of existence. It's something that can only happen if you exist. Exactly, so exactly. I basically said that if you want to look at the, I guess, philosophy of it, writing is not about publication or even necessarily communication. It's about being alive and taking a moment to capture that in some way. Obviously, you can go and do creative things and write to an audience, and that's even better. Mm. But for all that, there's kind of, I mean, too much to say, almost. I think instead of me trying to give a bunch of instructions on how to write, you guys should all just come to my workshop sometime.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll make a discount code for Radio Free Brooklyn.
It's really great. Claire is a really great instructor, and she has very great insights. So I think anyone who's listening will benefit.
All right, I won't just get you all into a room and be like, writing is life, guys. Let's free write on that.
Yeah.
I promise. Yeah. It's more structured.
Also, what comes up for me is the there's different concepts. There's meaning, there's happiness, there's, kind of the, but where we find the convergence, whether or not life is about pursuing happiness and bliss, or whether or not life is about really finding a meaningful existence. And what is that really unpacking, what a meaningful existence really is?
You already said it. It's pursuing.
Pursuing, yeah.
So pursuing whatever, right, it implies, requires that you have a purpose in mind.
Yeah.
So
like our intention should bring us towards a stated goal or in the future. But at the same time, there's also that tension with teachings that are like, oh, be here now and being the present, everything's now. But
well, consider this, though.
Mm.
When you decide, even if it's because you've had a bad day, I am going to go to the store, get a pint of Soy Delicious vegan ice cream, because that would be what I'd do in the middle of the night. And I'm going to sit down and damn it, I'm going to eat that whole thing and I'm going to cry. It's like, that is not a super happy thing to do, but it's a goal. And that ice cream is going to taste good. And I don't think that's not being in the moment. I think that is recognizing the moment. Even if you say, I am going to meditate now, you're pursuing the mission of being in the moment.
Yeah.
So pursuit is the same thing as decision, but it implies that the process will be longer. Whereas decision is a noun that happened, or just a noun that is done. Once you say decision, it's already finished. Mm. Decide is a verb. Pursuit is an ongoing noun.
Exactly. Yeah, it's so interesting to think about how when we formulate our thoughts, there's such a, within self-talk and within talking about our experience, there's such a revelation of our inner experience. There's something there's something like inexpressible, but at the same time, when we start to articulate it, and then look over and kind of reflect, we find we find some real insights,
That or we tear it up and start all over again.
Exactly. Yeah.
But here's another piece of advice. Never throw anything away. That poem that I just read, I still have that. I still have that journal from seventh grade.
It's good because you can revisit things and then have a whole, and you remember, or it can connect the thought or connect the idea, and then try to it's always the way you express things. I think that is the major obstacle in writing.
Or the way you just randomly are tired or not thinking right and make a mistake and it turns out to be brilliant. Even if you only get one good line every 15 pages, you could have a poem by the time you finish a journal, right?
Exactly,
so
yeah.
It's kind of, I think that the only, one thing that is like active self-denial is, oh, I don't like, not because when people tear up journals, it's not all just creative stuff that they don't like. They're like, oh, I don't want to admit that I felt this, this, or this. I'm going to tear it up. But it's really braver to save it
Yeah.
Because tearing it up, no one has ever seen it but you. Probably very, very, like, less people would care about you in high school than you may want to think. Like, most people have enough going on now to not judge you for boys you liked in high school or anything. Unless you married them and they're still assholes, then I guess maybe there'd be a problem. But anyhow, try being brave enough to save your journals and to use your journals and to not get too caught up on, like, separating creative things from your journaling.
I would think, something that's been coming up for me is Friedrich Nietzsche. You know, he was someone
who... He has a tendency to come up.
He's been coming for me just because, like, you know, not only the Celebrity Sadhana or How to Meditate with the Hammer, my poetry book, drew from his energy because...
You can purchase.
You can find out more at vjrnathan.com, see some samples of
that. Or buy it on Amazon.
If you're against Amazon, I can understand at this point.
Yeah.
But BookBaby also has... I have the link to the BookBaby.
Okay, fine. So BookBaby, what I'm going to say is, if you don't call in, you'd better well go buy that book right now, and then we forgive you for not calling in.
Exactly.
You should buy it right now. And if you already have it, flip through and call in and share your favorite poem with us.
718-928-9732.
Yes. We should have made a jingle.
So what I was going to say was, I used the Meditate with the Hammer, Philosophize with the Hammer. I used that with all of the idols. And then, I started researching a little bit more about it. You know, I mean, I've been aware that his writings and Will to Power, you know, like his last writings. It's what I read and what I've understood. You know, he's always been a trajectory of, like, writing and then revising, and then all that, the Will to Power got hijacked, you know, by the Nazi movement and
Übermensch
sister.
Is kind of...
But I do believe his thoughts were hijacked, like, in other words, like, they were twisted and used, obviously, in a way that he did not intend.
I don't know enough about him to speculate.
But my point was, just thinking about saving writings, that, just basically how his last writings or last writings were, you know, kind of thing, incomplete thoughts that people later filled in blanks that he didn't intend. You know?
Ooh, I can share with you something, an exercise that we would do at my writer's workshops.
Yeah.
That listeners can know, and you can know what's in store for you, because I think we're going to do this. You're coming next Thursday, right?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, so if you have those old journals, what if you are writing a character who is a very pissed off 15-year-old girl at a snooty, terrible Jesuit high school? Well, now I could write that character because I was one. And I don't remember what I cared about, or I do to a certain extent. I remember the important stuff. But the thing is, our characters live through a lot of days that are not important days. We need to get the everyday of our characters' voices. And there are so many people who appear, like, our life experience is what we're drawing on. That's our research. So if you keep your journals, then you can go and look for that stuff that you don't like and know that it should go into the mouth of a different character. And what a wonderful resource to have. I also encourage my students to, like, spy on people and record them without their knowledge. I have had a few people who actually have who have scruples about that. So I guess it would be nice to be like, okay, well, why don't you go eavesdrop on yourself?
Yeah. It's because, like, sometimes I overhear things and, you know, randomly, completely out of context, and you're like, what conversation did that come out of?
Yeah, well, that's actually a prompt that I use for my students when, as a warm-up exercise, I'll take those snippets that I hear and say, like, write the rest of the scene. Mm-hmm. And also, if you're interested, that is something that happens that I put sometimes in the writing prompts.
Uh-huh.
That if you follow Rockaway Writers on Instagram, Facebook, and or Twitter, though I don't understand Twitter. I'm really bad at it.
Yeah.
So it's better. I'm working on it. It's better to follow Instagram. Every single day, and Facebook is good too, a writing prompt is posted at around 10 or 11 in the morning. So I have all of these prompts that some are dialogue prompts, some are situational prompts, some are poetry prompts, etc. And if you ever need some inspiration as your day is getting started, you should check out the prompt.
Yeah, yeah.
Listeners, and follow me and stuff.
Yeah,
make me feel liked.
at the Facebook fan page, VGR Nathan Poet, at VGR Nathan Poet. And mostly I end up cross-posting stuff from my personal page. But it's good to, like, have, you know, people follow that page as well, VGR Nathan Poet, on the Facebook page. And then you can find out more about, you know, Celebrity Sadhana, about Escape from Samsara, the two books I published, as well as I'll be posting some stuff about the zine that might be upcoming. I'll probably just be generating community interest and people who want to co-create the zine about Bodhi Hive, you know, Enlightened Collective. So, yeah, definitely write into me. I actually bought the, not really bought, but I bought the domain, but also I got the Gmail, bodhihive@gmail.com. So if you're specifically interested in exploring the zine, then you could write into bodhihive@gmail.com and just, you know, pitch me or something. I don't know. I'll probably do a submittal or something, but I don't know. It's all kind of evolving.
Oh, yeah. And since you guys have left us here to just talk about whatever we want and make demands of you and talk to each other and just ramble on, this could be interesting for some people. Rockaway Writers Workshop recently hosted VJ's book launch party for Celebrity Sadhana. And we also had the first in what was going to be a reading series called See and Hear, S-E-A, like the ocean.
Exactly.
Get it? See and Hear, where we had German translator Anne Poston reading some of her translations and original work. And unfortunately, Vijay, I don't know if you know this, that space is closing.
Oh, really?
At the end of the month.
Wow.
So it's a beautiful space. If anyone is in Rockaway, Rockaway Love Yoga is awesome. Look up Rockaway Love and take classes there while we're still around, because it's a really beautiful space and actually also inexpensive. But yeah, so you should take advantage of that space while you can. But in a more self-serving note, if anybody knows of or owns a venue that is anywhere near the Rockaways, or Forest Hills, and would like to host or put up, I guess, give shelter to a monthly writing series, no, Rockaway Writers Workshop cannot pay for this privilege because we're barely breaking even. Yeah. But if somebody would like to add that to their cafe or warehouse or pizza place or whatever, please email info@rockawaywritersworkshop.org or check me out on Facebook and direct message me on whatever media, but probably not Twitter because I'm not good at that.
Also, I'll put out to the community that 100 Bogart Street, the venue that hosts Radio Free Brooklyn, is putting out opportunity for a 10-day, at least like 10 days for people to try out co-working space and then to sign a lease.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you guys come to, if you want a co-working space and use 100 Bogart Street, just tell them Radio Free Brooklyn referred you and then we'll get a discount, you know, from our rent, a 10% discount.
Excellent.
So definitely I want you guys, if you're looking for a co-working space, to check out 100 Bogart Street.
It's really right great. Yeah. By the Morgan Owl.
Yeah, exactly.
Like right by to where when it's super cold and horrible in a couple of months, it's not too far away. It's not too depressingly far away.
Mm. Good, good. So, yeah, if people want to check out information about Rockaway Writers, about hosting them, or looking at 100 Bogart Street as a co-working space, you can either check out 100 Bogart Street, or you could write in to Truth to Power Show at Gmail.
Just write into Truth to Power Show and talk to us. Or call us now. We can tell you what the space looks like. We can hang out here. You could talk to us while we send you pictures and stuff. We could, like, go live or whatever. It would be great.
718-928-9732. So feel free to call in. We still have about 25 more minutes.
We do. Yeah. I mean, we can definitely fill that.
Yeah.
So
let's talk about the song. We played the song
Ne me quitte pas.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about it was a really great song. I really enjoyed it.
You ever want to know, and fair warning, this is about me. If you ever want to know what it looks like inside my head, watch the official music video for Regina Spektor's Ne me quitte pas. Like, for real. If you know me at all, you'll understand. It means don't leave me.
Don't leave me, yeah.
Yeah, so I started listening to Regina Spektor when I was living in Paris, and she made me happy. And it, I don't know, I don't usually listen to a lot of happy music. The happiest music I listen to is usually Tom Waits. And I don't know, it's not that happy. So Regina Spektor, she has a lot of sad songs too, but some are a little bit more cutesy. But they are definitely upbeat, some of them. And so Ne Me Quitte Pas was a song that I listened to a lot. Like, I, the first time I heard it, I was living in Paris. And, you know, just the whole I Love Paris in the Rain and hated New York and was, I think I, this was actually the year before I moved to Paris. But so it was kind of my, the world is terrible. I need to be happy. I'm going to cry and listen to Ne Me Quitte Pas on repeat. But it also has all the, you know, in the Bronxy Bronx, the kids go sledding down snow-covered slopes. I thought it was apropos.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah.
If you are the ghost of New York City, won't you stick around?
That is very good, yeah. And people will know in the past year, I'll play different songs that are coming out for me or songs that that I've been listening to. And each episode will feature at least one song, sometimes two. And over the course of the year, I've been meeting new and new indie artists. Just give a shout out to Death by Piano. It's a very good, kind of a very good duo that works on something. In my ear, it sounds, it kind of has similar sound to Radiohead, but a little bit more, you know, meditative, I guess. I don't know. It's just kind of,
a little bit less cool.
It's very good. It's very good.
I meant that in a good way.
A little bit in the, well, they're emerging. You know,
yeah.
I hope best. Yeah.
No, I'm, when I said, like, cool, yeah, exactly. I didn't mean like necessarily in a good way, more in a
like kind of the mainstream
big, exactly,
a little less mainstream, but and then we also had we had many different musicians playing on the show, and you know, they're really great. And definitely if any musicians want to call in, 718-928-9732, and we can talk a little bit about their music before we go off.
Or if you listeners crave the power of being able to decide on a song and stream that song out to other people, you could even call in at 718-928-9732 and ask us to play a song. And unless it's like really terrible, we'll definitely do it. Yeah. We'll probably play it even if it's terrible because we want you to call and stuff.
Yeah. Good.
So, Vijay, what creative projects are you working on now?
So I have a bunch of miscellaneous writing that I'm trying to, you know, collect to figure out.
Okay, oh, yeah. Did you do your homework?
Yeah. What would it fall into?
That wasn't your homework. Your homework was to do the four lines per.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I have a lot of different projects, that I'm thinking about, and ideas or through lines or themes or collections, or whether it be poetry or plays or fiction or essays. I don't know. My mind just goes in all different directions. I was still worried to spotlight them because I'm like, is it going to happen then?
Well, you need to. So my advice for Vijay, and this is for anybody who gets into the whirlwind of tons of projects, some started, some just ideas, tons of notes, but not actually getting too deeply into one. One of the reasons that happens is just anxiety, because we either have this idea and think we're going to forget it, or it's great to generate ideas, but when the time comes to actually then focus on one, suddenly there's that sort of performance anxiety. Can I do this? And it's just less fun. I mean, it gets fun as soon as you start writing, but the initial, like, coming up with a plan and finding that discipline is sometimes not as fun as just brainstorming and having no rules. So what I suggest doing is taking all of the projects that you have, all of your ideas, sitting down and writing them about them, just in as though you had to explain the project to somebody in four sentences or fewer. Okay, so you describe each, like, as though it were an abstract, even of a creative piece, in four sentences or less. Fewer.
Yeah.
It must be early. Anyhow, if you cannot do this, then the idea is not fully developed enough to start. If you're, I mean, of course you can start anything, but if you're trying to prioritize which projects to start first and which to develop a little bit more, if you can get an idea of your project a vague idea, even in four sentences. I mean, it doesn't have to stay with that idea, but it means that you are having an organized conversation with yourself in your mind. And it will help any writing partners or teachers or friends to understand if you're workshopping your work. So if you just have those four sentences, you know, that will, it also forces you to decide whether or not a spoiler is appropriate for your workshop.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause sometimes we want to ask our readers questions and we want to hear that they're asking certain kinds of questions. But sometimes we're like, in workshop, everybody's had that moment where somebody says something, this character is a real asshole. And we're like, no, wait, just wait until chapter 10 when this happens. And then at the end, they're in love and they get married and he dies for her. But then he comes back to life because he was really a vampire or whatever. And it's kind of like, okay, well, that changes all of the notes that I just made. It's cool that that's going to surprise the readers. But sometimes spoilers are good if you're getting help with your work.
Yeah, like a foreshadowing, you mean? Or like,
no, I'm saying that
before, or telling them the abstract.
Like, that well, kind
of building up. Yeah.
So when you look at the cover copy, the back matter of a book, it's never going to tell you what happens at the end.
Mm.
And in a workshop, I think that sometimes we fall into the habit of trying to entertain instead of work.
Yeah.
And so I'm writing a psychological thriller, anti-mystery. I don't know what it is. I've never written a book before. I don't really know what I'm doing. But when I start to tell people about it, they're like, oh, don't tell me the end. I'm like, can't I please, so that you can tell me if it sucks or not? And like, because it's when you're writing with people, it's about the process. Exactly. And the process involves thinking ahead.
Yeah. So one thing I worked on 2017, a new works grant from Queen's Arts Council to work on a project that ultimately became the Paparazzo Poet Meditations.
Mm-hmm.
And having that clear through line, or having a clear vision of really what it was about, helped me, because I took 10 days off from work and I leave. And then basically I worked for 10 days and I finished the manuscript, which is, it's 50 pages, but the point is I was able to kind of complete the vision of what I had in a relatively short amount of time, because I had clear perception of, you know, where it was beginning, where it was middle, and where was the end. And then that helps a lot when you have a clear idea about what you're targeting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm probably going to continue that series, the Paparazzo Poet Meditations, to a book two.
Uh-huh.
So I have a few poems written up. I've selected some celebrities that I'm going to spotlight as in meditative moments. And the first book kind of looks at different celebrities and puts them in a meditative arc, looking at, for example, the dreams, their dreamscapes. Winona Ryder I used as a symbol or as a character,
mm-hmm.
Where I looked at some of her anxiety dreams around her kleptomania phase, mm-hmm. You know, where she was arrested at Saks Fifth Avenue.
For stealing socks, which is kind of awesome.
I think a lot of clothing. Yeah,
I know, but they, for some reason. Okay.
Yeah.
So for some reason, the magazines and newspapers made a big thing about her stealing like a bunch of pairs of these way overpriced socks.
Uh-huh.
And frankly, this was in the headlines and stuff. And I just chose not to read on to see if she stole anything else, because I loved the vision that I had of like Winona Ryder stuffing her bra full of socks or something.
Yeah.
Right. And just the idea of, I mean, it is tragic to be a kleptomaniac. You know, it's kind of, I don't know if she, I mean, she's cool and weird. Maybe she just was doing it for fun and decided to steal socks for whatever reason. But it's also kind of, it's a compulsion. I don't want to say like, oh, that's so awesome. But
yeah, I mean, definitely the way it's depicted in media is one thing. And the personal experience.
Wait, you mean media is not real life?
Yeah. So definitely the poetry book kind of analyzes and explores kind of that dual vision, and kind of along the lines of, in my vision, of, you know, the purpose of, or kind of going, getting the prompt of, Nietzschean idea of the twilight of the idols, that we're dismantling these idols and we're mm-hmm. kind of looking at them more critically. And then today's modern day idols, today's modern day, Hollywood gods or whatever. We're kind of dismantling them and looking at them as people and kind of connecting the humanity,
mm-hmm.
as well as, you know, looking at the whole culture of fame and celebrityhood and all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So all these different themes come up.
I have an idea, because you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking that the listening audience is either asleep or having morning sex right now. I'm just not going to call in. So I was wondering if one of two things, either you, maybe we should each choose our favorite poem by someone else and our favorite poem that we've written.
Uh-huh.
And if you have, or if you have a poem that was inspired by somebody else's poem,
mm-hmm.
do you have any of those?
I have some convergence, but yeah, I have to look and memorize them. But
do you?
Yeah, I have it on my computer. Yeah.
So would you be able to
pull it up?
I can start us off. Do you like that idea?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So I guess what we're gonna do is we're going to share with you our favorite poem by not necessarily famous poet, but someone who isn't us. And then we are going to share either just our favorite piece of original work or original work linked to the poem we've just shared. And perhaps we'll also talk just a little bit about that kind of process or analytical thinking that we would be looking for if we asked for submissions for Body Hive. Okay. So one of my biggest inspirations on my current full-length collection of poetry in the works is Linda Hull. I wish we had more time because then I'd tell you all about her, but we don't, so I won't. Linda Hull she's called a female jazz poet by Yusuf Kumanyika in his foreword to her collected works. And I think what I like about her is that atypical rhythm kind of reminds me of Tom Waits and the way she sort of slides through rhyme and structure. So I came up with an exercise, or I adapted an exercise that I had been given in undergraduate, where you do a call and response poem line for line with a poem that you choose, and then you edit it down. Oh, and this will let me redeem myself with like how to write dark stuff about death, because this is a very deathy poem too, but it's actually good. So I took Linda Hull's address from Suite for Emily, which is probably her most famous set of poems. I'll read you hers, and then I'll read you my adaptation. Hello, death angel, old familiar, old nemesis. In the deepest hours, I have recognized your floating shape. I've seen your breath seduce the torn curtain, masking the empty window, have crouched with you in the doorway, curled in the alley, hooded in your essence and shadow, have been left blue, heart-stopped, for you, for yours. Death, you are the bead in the raptor's eye. Death, you dwell in the funneling depths of the heavens beyond each star's keening shrill. Death, you are the potion that fills the vial, the night the monuments have swallowed. You live in the maimed child wrapped in a wreckage of headlines. Death, you center in the fanged oval of the prison dog's howl. Death, you dwell within the necropolis we wake to in nightmare's hot electric wind. You glint the edge of the boy's razor, patient in the blasted stairwell. Everywhere you walk, deep lawns, TVs pollinating the air, and animals wired up to dance for their food with executions and quiz shows. You're in the column of subway wind roaring before each train's arrival. I've seen you drape thoughtlessly a woman's hair across her face as the shot carried her forward into stop time and beyond anything she's laid her money down for. Death, your silver works swiftly through the bloodstream. Hello, death angel, plague is your sister. I've seen her handiwork, heard the tortured death, watched her loosen the hands of dazzling boys from each other. For love, for love. I've seen the AIDS hotels and sick ones begging homeless in the tunnels, the whispered conspiracies. Shameless emissaries with your powders and wands, your lunar carnivorous flowers. Tricks, legerdemain. I've seen you draw veined wings over the faces of sleepers, the abandoned, the black feather that sweeps so tenderly. I've seen you stain the scribe on the pavement, the glossy canopy of leaves you weave. I've seen waste and ruin, known your kingdom for delirium, the furious thumbprints you've scored on the flesh of those you choose. I've seen you slow dance in a velvet mask, dip and swirl across dissolving parquet. I've seen you swing open the iron gate, garden spired in valerian skullcap blue vervain. Seen you stir in the neat half moons, fingernails left absently in a glazed dish. Felons, I've cursed you in your greed, have spat and wept, then acquiesced in their wake. Without rue or pity, you have marked the lintels and blackened the water. Your guises multiply, bewildering as the firmaments, careless jewelry. Death, I have welcomed you to the rooms where plague has lain when the struggle is past, and lit the candles and blessed the ash. Death, you have taken my friends and dwell with my friends. You are the human wage. Death, I am tired of you. So I wrote a call and response poem to this where I actually went line by line and used her grammar. But first, Vijay, do you have your first poem to share?
The poem by a poet?
Yeah.
Oh, should I say that? Okay.
Yeah, so I'm gonna get my other one out and okay, you do yeah. that.
So this poem is by Dylan Thomas. It's something that I think about a lot. Do not go gentle into that good night. Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at the close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words have forked no lightning they, do not go gentle into that good night. Good men, the last wave by, crying how bright, their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay, rage, rage against the dying of the light. Old men who have caught and sang the sun is flight, and learned too late they grieved it on its way. Do not go gentle into that good night. Grave men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears. I pray, do not go gentle to the good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
Awesome. One of the best villanelles. All right. So my response poem to Linda Hall's address, and this was a great exercise for me because, as you might notice from my constantly correcting myself and holding back from correcting other people, I'm kind of a grammar freak. And so to write in non-standard sentences is difficult. And I forced myself to follow the grammar on this. So this is called Fair for the Ferryman after Linda Hall's address. Hello, death angel, spirit guide, siren. In the thin light, I have found you outlined. I've seen the whispers of your breath fog the window, looked past my reflection to your porcelain mask, have knelt for you behind trash cans and followed you blind to alleys drenched, mattresses stained with you, am weak with being bled for you and yours. Death, you are the chill that catches. Death, you dwell in the thick rush of the heavens beyond each storm's slow fury. You're the white rules on the addict's mirror, the spur in the tracks of her rail-thin arm, the quick switch of the signalman. You are the night outlet. You are the night atlas, landmarked. Death, you sleep with women you order from full-color ads on the back of the voice, keep mistresses in midtown dungeons, dressed to the nines to play your role in the silence between sunset and streetlight. You are in love, made on corners, in stairwells, in the back seats of taxis. You run the meter, death, you keep the time. You are the lie of living wages. Death, your hands are skilled workers. Death, I am acquainted with famine, your twin. I've seen her fill the beggar's cup, run her tongue along hungry veins, kiss girls starved for love and shut their mouths. I've slept on bone-cold beds made of shadows of bridges, seen women who lie beneath men for shelter, what they look up to. I've met the man who serve you, who mind your accounts, tricks turned fair for the ferryman. I've seen dreams of you. I know the dreamers. I've seen you do your work in their sleep. I've seen waste and ruin, know your realm for fevered visions, the quiet throes and blackened eyes of the ones you choose. I've seen you dance twilight, your arms, scythes, your face veiled in steam and exhaust. And I've heard you come calling, ready with mums and baby's breath. Death, I have denied you, looked away, wept and kicked and fallen back on you. With neither rue nor grace, you have traced a new map, drawing all roads to you, salting the earth in your stride. Nothing is lost on you, showered in rain's spent silver. Death, I will find you outside my door someday when famine has had her fill and the check must be settled. I will let you in. Death, you have demanded your ransom of my friends. You're the currency of the body. Death, I cannot count the cost.
Thank you. Thank you. So in the interest of time, I guess I'll read. I'll go straight to reading. It's not quite a response per se, but it did kind of, it is in dialogue with the Do Not Go Gentle This Tonight.
Sorry, I didn't realize how long those were until I started reading. I'm like, can I skip to the end? No, I can't skip to the end.
So it's called Versus Nature. Alan strikes a wooden match, setting the kindling on fire as I hold up a black umbrella to shield the flames. As the box burns, Jeff asks, what good is starting a campfire in this downpour? It will only die out. Alan remains adamant. I just want to prove we can before lighting the umpteenth match. For a moment, the fire burns wild colors as the water falls onto the flames before it finally succumbs to the storm. Stacy prepares this tent for Scrabble as the smoke gently rises.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's actually based on a real incident where we were in a campsite and my friend Alan was trying to light the campfire. And I just felt, out of context and connecting it with death and connecting it with how we... Our moments are brief, wondrous experiences before we succumb to the storm and connecting with the gentle aspect. Yeah.
Like a campfire mandala.
Yeah. So ready for your book. And this is our year anniversary of the Truth to Power show.
And we'll wait till next year for you guys to call in. You have a year to figure out what to say.
A year to get your phones on and figure out what to do, what to talk to us about. So this is about episode 46. We've done 45 episodes so far, and if you want to support our mission, Radio Free Brooklyn is a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. So to help support our mission, we invite you to make a one-time donation.
And if you're listening and didn't call, we damn well expect you to.
Yeah, exactly. We need to have you
come
in.
It doesn't go to us. It goes to keep the roof over our head at 100 Bogart Street.
Yeah, exactly. go make your monthly pledge at readyforbrooklyn.org/donate. And this is all donations are tax deductible to the full extent of the law. And if you're interested in helping the community even more, you can find out about our after school program at readyforbrooklyn.org/afterschool. If you're listening on your computer, you can find out about the apps for your iPhone or Android. Just go to the app stores, go to readyforbrooklyn.org/iPhone or /Android.
And make sure to look up VJR Nathan's Facebook page for info about his upcoming work and Truth Power Show. And also check out rockawaywritersworkshop.org.
Exactly. Truthpowershow.podomatic.com has the archives of all 45 episodes. So you can go binge listen as we do
absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
This next episode. So it may take you a little while, but it's just as good as Netflix, I think.
If you guys show enough love, maybe VJ and I will do like a web series.
We should bring it to a television show, right? Yeah.
Damn, then I'd have That'd to put makeup on to come here, though. I don't know about that.
That'd be awesome. So we've got a few more seconds. So thank you so much.
Thanks.
And thank you.
So now you can officially turn off your electronics and do your morning writing.
Thank you.